When ordinary people think of autumn, they imagine shorter days, cozy fires, curling up with a great piece of literature, and basking in the warming scent of cinnamon with shades of burnt orange, which your other half has decided to spend the life savings on to decorate the home for only 2 months, just as God intended. Yet we must remember that this transition into the frosty abyss of winter creates the perfect conditions for the spread of the pathogen known as Halloween. This disease causes people to dress like demons and go door to door asking for free stuff. This public service announcement aims to give you the correct tool to help you deal with these contagious commie behaviors when they manifest in your local community. First, you'll want to arm yourself with multiple shots of the best-selling paperback on Amazon called The Nephilim Looked Like Clowns. With this PPE, you're fully equipped and well protected to handle what's to come next. Second, have a pumpkin spice latte and white girl autumn your time away in knitted cream shackets and pilgrim hats, because soon enough, Samhain begins. This is when the veil between the spirit realm and the physical world is at its thinnest, and possession, the main symptom of Halloween, is more commonly presented, causing this type of unironic cringe to start happening. Just look at him. This poor soul thinks he looks cool. And if you're not careful, this could be you. Together we can stop the spread of Halloween and flatten the curve. When you see fully grown adults playing dress-up and mirroring unspeakable horrors from beyond the void, remember your training and cure their vapid sense of self-identity by handing them one of our favorably reviewed treatments. Your country must develop herd immunity to seasonal cringe. So, spread the cure far and wide. Just like the cure, this disease does not discriminate by age. Emulating the infected, you will see children running around in bedsheets, knocking on doors, begging for sugary treats, and threatening to damage your well-earned property. Make sure to fill their novelty buckets with the one thing all children secretly want: a well-rounded and relatable education in biblical history. That'll stop the spread. The Nephilim Look Like Clowns and the inevitable boost of volumes are currently the only known cure to thinly veiled demon channeling holidays. This is your best defense against this pandemic of spooky proportions. All you have to do is trust the science, which you know we did because I'm showing you people wearing lab coats and looking serious. Get your copy on Amazon today and be prepared for tomorrow. Side effects of reading The Nephilim Look Like Clowns include, but are not limited to, a feeling of existential crisis, a well-rounded knowledge of a Christian contrarian view on human history, a foundational understanding of spiritual warfare, and a healthy aversion to clowns.
Hello everyone, come on in, sit on down, how are we all doing? I'm going to do a random off-the-cuff live Q&A today. I'm in the mood to test out the brand new paint job I've just done in the office. What do you think? I think it contrasts quite nicely. For those who can't see, who maybe listen to this in podcast format, it's like a nice, sagey, clover-like green of some kind. I had no idea how it would turn out, but it was an off-the-cuff random choice. I like it. It's calming. It's cool. Like I said, it seems to fit the gingery, pale, Irish-looking vibe I've got going on anyway. So I'm fine with that. You guys let me know what you think. I've attached this thing to the wall as well, tenuously, that it's not too well done in that top corner because I couldn't drill very deep to get the plugs in the wall. So hopefully it doesn't collapse on me at any moment. I still got some doors to attach to this. But in the meantime, I thought, you know, I'll pop the book on the shelf. It's good framing, isn't it? See how it looks. But yes, guys, it's the afternoon for me. It's 20 past two in the afternoon. The wife has taken the son out to the park to have a bit of fun. Could turn up at any moment, I don't know. But while the wife's away, the husband will do a live stream for about an hour or so just to answer some questions. As the classic saying goes, I'm sure we all know that. So how are we doing, guys? Who's in the chat? What's going on? Let's see, we've got some familiar faces. The Real McCoy, thanks for being here. Amelia, great to see you as always. We've got Stacia. We've got Zachary. We've got MK Ryan in the house, the moderator of the Telegram group, and of course the YouTube. Thanks for being here, MK Ryan. I appreciate it. Congratulations on 75,000, says Janelle. Thank you, Janelle. Yes, it's it was only like 20 days ago, I think, I was celebrating 70,000. So the channel is growing fast. I did some math, and I'm averaging roughly about 50 to 60 new subscribers a day, give or take. Some higher, some lower, you know. I had a mad burst of new subscribers thanks to the Parasite video going viral. It's on about just shy of 400,000 views now, maybe just a bit less. And obviously, podcast visits and so forth are always constantly bringing in new viewership, which is great. But I did the math, and it seems I'm on track for maybe 100,000. Maybe, let's say, the end of February. Which isn't bad. Not bad. Not long away at all. Exciting stuff. Let's see if we can't get this done before Christmas, eh? That'll be a nice present for myself. I get my own special little silver plaque, which means absolutely nothing. And I'll put it maybe on top of the shelf up there or something. Who knows? But yeah, guys, it's exciting stuff, and I just needed an excuse to do a live show, because to be honest, I just want to talk to you guys. The 75,000 thing seems like a good enough reason of any to do it, so here we are. So yeah, guys, if you have any questions for me, if there's any topics you want bridging or discussing, let me know in the chat. I will start by I've already answered the question. Someone else asked me a question on one of my videos. I left it to the Telegram group to answer the question. I just threw it to them and said, guys, I'm busy parenting right now. My hands are full. I don't have time to think and reason out a big long paragraph answer. What would you guys say to answer this question? And he left some great answers. And luckily, the guy who left the comment is in the Telegram, saw all these answers and says, oh, well, thanks for answering my question for me. So problem solved. But I think it was a good question that's worth going over and just thinking about. Let's just think it out and see what you guys think about this concept and these ideas. So I'm going to do that first, but if you guys have any other questions you want me to get to afterwards, leave them in the chat, and I'll try and get to them once we've gone through that one. Chris G asks, have you heard about bodily fluid retention and the benefits? Well, I think a lot of that's to do with, like, the manosphere. Talk about that quite a lot, don't they? And the idea of, going without doing any onanism for so long that it does give male benefits in many ways, which is clearer, more clarity, more energy, more motivation, higher testosterone, all these type of things. So I've heard of all that. Yeah, and I think there's probably something to it. Absolutely. I don't know if a lot of it might have to do with issues of pornography. And if you do do anything like that, that involves pornography along with it, rather than, obviously, let's say, having sex with your partner, like your wife, which is probably a different thing. I do think it has a different psychological effect on the brain, which can cause more psychological damage and further issues. So it might not necessarily be the action itself that's the issue, but the means to get the senses going that are the problems. And I think that's where the problems can arise. It's an interesting topic, Chris G. Not really something I cover on this channel in a conspiratorial sense, but that's really more of like the MITGAL stuff, isn't it? You know, that's where you hear a lot of people talking about that kind of thing. That's not what this channel is, but I hope that helps, and thank you for the super chat. Ooh, nice colour, says Celine. So someone likes the colour. Great. I like it too. I think it turned out a lot better than I thought it would. You guys can't see the office here. Maybe I'll give you a quick tour. It's only small, a very small space, but I've got my desk here, so I'll just quickly loop this under. This is the desk. It's like a wall desk. It kind of covers from here to the other side. That's a very old 2011 Mac or something, which we're going to get rid of, which is useless and slow and doesn't do anything for anybody. Got a nice mirror there. Sorry, window there. But it's a very small office, as you can see. But we're going to get some shelves just put up on this wall here. They're two big shelves, and then all these books can get moved up onto the shelf, which should help me out quite a lot. Got my printer here, got plenty of drawers on each side. It's held up by drawers, which is quite good. I've got boxes that need sorting out. But the office is on its way. Very little time to get it done, especially with the family. But I've managed to paint this wall, so I'm proud of myself. Something done. I better plug this laptop back in before it dies on me as well. The fan on, because it is very hot in here. There we go. Right, I think I'm getting a little bit of lag. I think the video's overloading, which it makes it a little bit. And I'm just going to bring it back to an image just to stop that from overloading for a little bit, guys. But you can hear my voice. That's what counts. That's all that matters, isn't it? And let me just close some of these tabs here as well, just to help the internet smooth out a little bit as well. And we don't want to overload the processor. I think showing off the office was too much for this computer to handle, clearly. So we just close some unnecessary tabs quickly. But the one that is necessary, of course, is the Telegram. So this is the one I'm going to share with you guys in a second once I get it all prepped and ready to go, so we can look at the question and look at the answers as well. So I've got it up on the screen there, ready to go. Brilliant. And let's just share the screen. There we go. So here it is on Telegram. Someone left me a comment on one of my recent videos, and I'll read it out to you. It's here by Fabio, and he asks, why would all the elites who are in the know then be so stupid to side with the wrong side? How come they know? How come they who know so much are so dumb, and the people who know nothing are the ones that make the right choice? Isn't that very ignorant to think? It feels off somehow to assume that. What are your thoughts on this? And you know, Fabio, it was a good question. And I've kind of abridged this question in a video before. And I think I titled it something like, they think they're the good guys, or something like that. And this it is a topic I have repeatedly been battling with myself. It's a question I've asked myself repeatedly. It's like, how can these people fall for this? Surely they're not that dumb, right? You know, what is it they're getting exactly that makes them think that this is the right choice to make? Like, if they're aware the devil exists, why would they side with him over God? And you've got to, and I think the issue is perspective, isn't it? I don't think we can fully comprehend just the view of the world. I think a lot of the answers people gave in the Telegram were really, really insightful and really good, and I do enjoy them. So let me just bring that up. It's like the encoding has stopped again. But I'll show you here the answers people gave. Sorry, I'm just trying to get the right tab up. So I said, no, can people give me the best answer to this? My hands are currently tied with parenting stuff, so I can't give my two cents at the moment. But I'm curious what everyone else would answer this question. And Barbear said, seems to me that people by default are easily controlled by their weaknesses. They could be taken in by dark forces via their sin in exchange for power. Or it could also be ideological rebellion, that Lucifer's whole thing, wanting to rebel against God. So the first answer brings something good to the table. And it's the idea that, well, these people who are in positions of extreme control and power and influence over people, they may not actually simply be that intelligent. Or if they are intelligent, it doesn't mean they're emotionally intelligent or have mastery necessarily over their lusts or desires. And they could be easily swayed or influenced to think that they are gods among men or better than other people by virtue of how much stuff they've got or how much control they have. And it's kind of an idea of they're not really willing to relinquish that control or power they have over people because they enjoy it. I mean, that'd be really, really smart, but they also enjoy rebelling against God, having the power over others. And it's not really a choice or something they're willing to give up all the worldly gains and possessions. And like I said, people by default are easily controlled by their weaknesses. So you know, Lucifer, the devil, is in the game of giving people and everything. You know, Satan offered Jesus in the wilderness, you know, the whole world at the top of the mountain. He said, I'll give you all these kingdoms if you just bow down and worship me. The devil can give you everything. He can give you the whole world, you know. But you know, what profit a man who gained the whole world but loses his soul? It's quite simple, really, isn't it? But some people don't see it that way. And I think a lot of people. Another thing I want to bring up is the definition of intelligence. So, what makes somebody so smart necessarily? What makes them so intelligent? Being an elite by default makes them intelligent, and by then the definition. Do you mean knowing lots and lots of facts, being really good with numbers, does that make you intelligent? Are we going off a measure like something like an IQ point score? Is that what makes somebody intelligent? Or is it common sense? Because I've met really, really, really smart people who go to really, really intelligent, big brain schools, you know, like Oxford, let's say. And they are socially inept and have zero common sense. But they can tell you a lot about Chaucer. You know? Like, yeah, sure, they might know a lot of book stuff, but they don't really understand how to live in the world very well. I think there are different levels of intelligence and definitions of intelligence. And just because somebody has power, influence, and control, or even a lot of occult book knowledge, doesn't mean they're smart, necessarily. I think we have to always bear that in mind as well. And it doesn't mean they're suddenly above their own basic instinct, lusts, and desires, and aren't easily going to capitulate to doing more evil things and going along with the devil's plan if it means they can have more stuff. You know, so I think, again, basic human instinctual desire is one good reason why these elites are stupid enough to be on the wrong side, even if they do know the truth that God is real. Just the desire for stuff. Basic, really, isn't it? Wendy gave a good answer. She says, they are the fallen ones and or their minions. Of course they believe they can win. It comes down to pride, no matter how you look at it. Pride will blind somebody into believing anything, even thinking they can actually beat our father. Now, that's a great one. And I appreciate that, Wendy. Thanks for that. And thanks, Barbara, for your answer as well. These are good answers. And yes, I think people also underestimate what pride will make people do. You know, the desire to not want to have a god above them. The desire to be their own god is, well, it's the lie in the Garden of Eden. It's the first lie. You will be as gods. That's the promise of Satan. You know, he's promising these people, you will be gods among men. And you will rise above God, and we will win, and we will carve out our own empire, free from the shackles and the tyranny of this creator God who keeps you trapped here in your limited, aging, decaying bodies. Follow me, and I'll give you a new world full of power, and you will be like God yourselves. You don't need him. All you need to do is believe in yourself. You know, and that's all the devil's offering, your self-actualization, you know, stuff like that, and all that nonsense, all that Gnostic bullshit, basically. And there'll be, I think these people in these positions of power, because they are in the elite bloodline circles and literally have zero connection to what it is to be a normal person in this world that struggles, they probably literally do have this divine right to rule belief within them. And many of them even believe they have the special blood, you know, that gives them and that makes them more than human, because they have part angel Nephilim blood in them or something. And that pride they feel in themselves, it's like, I am above humanity. Like, they believe themselves to be more than human, far beyond us. You know, in power and knowledge and intellect and influence. It's kind of like, why should they concern themselves with the petty religions of the proletariat masses? You know what I mean? That's cute. They need to bow down to a god. I am a god. That's kind of the pride they have in their minds, you know. They probably genuinely do believe they can win. And in some cases, I also think they might actually think they are the good guys. And the God of this world, our Father in heaven, is evil. You know, many of them might also believe that. And yes, they might be really smart. They might know lots and lots of things, lots of arcane occult wizard knowledge or something. Or, you know, they might be really fiscally and monetarily savvy, you know, and have a lot of... not really good with numbers and math or something or whatever. They might be intelligent in many ways, but that doesn't mean they can't succumb to pride. You know, and that doesn't mean they can't also be very stupid in other ways just because they're really intelligent, you know. Again, intelligence doesn't make you immune to sin. I think it's the theme we're getting here, isn't it? MK Ryan said, yeah, I don't know that they're siding with the wrong side. They're just the wrong side. They aren't getting into the kingdom regardless because they can't. They're stuck here until the final judgment. That's not to say that the possessed can't be cleansed and have that spot filled by the Holy Spirit, but I think that's very rare, if not unheard of, among these elites. At least that's my current take, since you put me on the spot. And again, it's a great take. You got to reframe the question you asked here, you know. Why would the elites who are in the know be stupid enough to pick the wrong side? It's like, they're not picking the wrong side. They are the wrong side. Like, they were born into it in a way. There was never a choice to make. They are a member of the fallen of this world who are already fully in the know about their place and lot in everything, and that, let's say, Christ has already returned, you know, if you want to go down that route, or that, you know, the devil rules this world and it's in opposition against God. They probably know all of this, and it's kind of like, well, my family's already chosen the devil, and we've already benefited from it and have all this power and influence, and they've probably been raised to believe this is what we deserve, this is what we have in our life, and nothing can change that, you know, and enjoy it while it lasts. And like I said, they might believe all these promises that have been given to them, that they will have their own kingdom, their own world. You don't need to be a part of God's kingdom, of the heavenly kingdom, you know, of Jesus's kingdom. We'll make our own. And they might, like I said, they might genuinely believe that. And you have to understand that the Gnostics at higher levels, and this isn't, again, I know Gnostic is a big umbrella term, but that's a good way to describe this particular sect of elitist Gnosticism. They're in a death cult. I mean, people forget this. They are literally in a death cult. And they believe that humanity is at its weakest when the population is at its highest. Because they have kind of like a collective consciousness of worldview of humanity. And that consciousness, when condensed into fewer bodies, is more powerful. And the more people there are, the more dispersed the consciousness is, and therefore the weaker it becomes. So they believe by killing like swaths of people through mass genocides, they're actually making humanity stronger and giving us more magical powers, basically, and getting more in touch with our divinity and being like a god. And if you go way, way, way back, they also believe that humanity shouldn't be male or female. It should be one androgynous oneness. And even the separation of humanity into man and woman was a weakening of the soul and spirit of collective humanity. It's all this Matrix Demiurge stuff, you know, the god of this world is evil and we need to correct what he's done to us to make us weak, you know, so it's a mix of, they also think they are the wrong side, but they actually think they're the good guys doing the right thing. You know, it's for the greater good type of stuff. You know, they're in a death cult and they think they're the good guys. So again, it's not that they're like stupid enough to pick the wrong side. They just don't know they're the wrong side. They don't get it. They think they are the correct right side, doing what's best for humanity in many ways. Not all of them, but a particular sect of the elite genuinely believe that, you know. And there might only literally be quite a few humans in on the earth right next to the devil himself who knows what's really going on. Very few. And that's how pyramid schemes work as well. Don't forget how the hierarchy works. It's cartpot mentalization through a pyramid pattern. There's only a very, 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 very select few at the very tippy top who actually know 100% the truth about what's really going on with humanity in this world. And then below that, there's different levels of deceptions and belief systems, and each level believes they're probably at the top. And then until you get right to the bottom, which is us, who are holding up the pyramid system and aren't even a part of it. We're not even in the club, you know what I mean? We're under the foot of it, in a sense. Well, of course, unless you take your authority in Jesus Christ and step out of Babylon, then you're no longer in that game, are you? You're free from it. But those who are in it are kind of blinded by it, I would say. So there's three great answers. I think there's another one here from Alex Blakemore. And he responds, you know, honestly, it's a good question, which is what I thought. What came to mind was Judas Iscariot. Also, the devil tempting Jesus in the wilderness in Matthew 4:8-9. So, number 8. Again, the devil taketh him up into an exceeding high mountain. That's the pyramid I was talking about earlier. And showeth him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. And saith unto him, all these things I will give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me. Now the serpent tempts humanity with a prospect of power and glory. Ye shall be as gods, etc. And we are, I suppose, by nature weak to this. It is easier to conceptualize the claim of rewards of worldly possessions, status and power. My guess is that the elites prefer the idea of becoming a god rather than worshipping God. So that's what I was mentioning earlier. It's much easier to conceptualize the idea of having worldly stuff right here, right now. You know, it's hard to put our faith in things not of this world when you can't have them right here and now, only in death after this, you know. So some people aren't willing to live a life of sacrifice unless some people, unfortunately, have that lust and desire and pride within them to have it all now instead. Delayed gratitude was just not a thing that was ever awarded to them as elites. They've only ever had anything they've ever wanted then and now since birth. And it's old habits die hard. Going back to MK Ryan's point there, you know, that it's very rare, if not heard of, among the elites to break free and be filled with the Holy Spirit. They can. Nobody's too far gone that can't be saved by Jesus Christ. He came to save the sinners. It's just rare. You know, it's easier for the camel to go through an eye of a needle than for a rich man to make it into the kingdom of God. And I know we're imagining literally a mammal with four legs and two humps and a long neck trying to get through the eye of a threaded needle where we put the thread. But I think the real point they were making there is the needle was what was referred to as the entrance to a place, a walled city. They called the entrance the needle. It was like a thin entrance, you know, and the whole point is that obviously armies can't break through quickly, I think. And I think he was trying to make the idea that in order for a camel to get through the eye of a needle, the rich man has to drop all the things the camel was carrying, all the bags on the side and things like that, in order to get through the gate with the camel. And I think the idea, the metaphor is the rich man would have to leave behind everything in order to make it through the gate. And not many rich people are willing to leave it all behind. So I think that's what the metaphor was actually saying with the camel through the eye of the needle. That was for people that didn't know, I've heard that before. Maybe I'm completely wrong. I think I'm right. I just remember hearing that in passing a while ago on some random channel. And I think that's true. I think the metaphor holds truer when you realize it in the not so literal modern sense of, you know, sewing needles and mammals. We're talking about a thin entrance to a gate and a fully burdened camel. You know, the camel would have to drop everything, and the rich man may even have to leave the camel behind if he wants to get through the gate into the kingdom of heaven. So yes, another great answer there from Alex, a great biblical reference as well to being tempted on the top of the mountain by the devil. So Darren kind of further compounds a lot of these responses, and he says the elites are born into the elite world. They don't think like the rest of us do, and very likely think evil is good. So again, what I was trying to say earlier, they don't understand our viewpoint. No, they're raised to be bent that way. You can easily see it in the way they treat us, since most of them are in opposition to authority. I think a few may break away from it, but it's rare. Yeah. So some great answers there. And Pauline kind of further went on with this and said, it's like mind control from the cradle to the grave. You know, they're told that they're set apart, they're divine, they're different. You know, next time old Charlie boy or his son, Wills, does a walkabout, remember, they don't see us as the same as them. The smiles are fake. You know, Annie still wears gloves when she touches the commoners, I bet. Talk about the royal family there. But this could be anybody, you know. It's all smoke and mirrors. They put on a show of humanity and compassion, you know. They have carefully orchestrated documentaries made about them, an insight into their life, you know. Everything's controlled about what we are supposed to perceive them as being. But the truth is, they are not like us. They are completely worlds apart. They live on a different earth than we do. And I don't feel like they will ever cross barriers with us and see it from our side. And I think because of the things they have, they will continue to, as you know, the original questioner asked here, Fabio, they'll continue to choose the wrong side, if you want to use that language. And then he said, I was the one who asked these questions on YouTube, and now I found this amazing Telegram channel. Great answers in the chat here. Thank you. And I said, I'm glad you found the answers. I tend to agree with them all. I was going to get back to you, but you've saved me a job. I think I'll make a video about it. Now. So here we are, guys. We're doing the video about it. We've gone through the idea, and I think we've covered quite a lot of topics there. And I think it's good food for thought, and I think it's definitely worth thinking about these concepts. Absolutely. I'm going to switch back to the webcam, see if it works. I turn off the light. Well, look at the difference. Watch when I turn this light on. Look at the detail that suddenly just appeared. But it seems to be lagging a little bit. My internet must not be doing too great. Let's see how long this lasts before it starts to lag, shall we? It's getting a bit darker outside, so it looks like the glare from the window's disappearing a little bit. So, in the chat, what do you guys think? Let me know. Let's go through this together. Oh, we got a $10 super chat. Judge Holden is a character from the book Blood Meridian in A Gang of Murderers and implied to be a manifestation of evil. Described as 7 foot tall, with white skin and a wide grin, bold with a baby face. Someone showed me that before and I did look into that. And yeah, very interesting, very Nephilim-esque, I agree. But thanks, Peanut Gallery, for sharing that, and thanks for the super chat, I really appreciate it. Let me scroll back up the chat here, see what I've missed. People like the background. As a painter, I can 100% approve of the job done. The colour is okay. Okay, excellent. Yeah, the paint job's good. The colour, I like the colour. I think it's like, what colour do you want an office to be? You don't want something too colourful, and you want it a place where you can focus, and green's like a healthy colour. And I'm going to put a lot of plants in here once I'm done as well. I'm a plant guy. People didn't know that about me. I'm really into plants. Anyway, moving on. Green and the best colour, the colour of Yahweh's throne and his earth, says Miles. Well, there you go. Yeah, I wasn't really thinking about that when I did it, but yeah, absolutely. Colour coordinated with the jumper. The jumper's like a nice blue colour. I'm feeling, not festive necessarily, I feel like I'm connecting back to my Nordic roots. something like that. MK Ryan, I can dig it. Excellent. Let's see if have you heard about the benefits of, so still going through the retention thing. Paul has a nice sweater today, says Elizabeth. Thanks. Elizabeth, now I've got you here. Elizabeth Joyce Artworks, for those who don't know. She is an amazing artist who is currently working on a great piece of artwork. So this is what she sent me and my wife in the post. Wonderful there with the Bible, obviously a Matthew 22 reference. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. Excellent reminder. Well, she is currently working on making a colorized version of this fantastically detailed drawing. I mean, look at this thing. It's incredible. It's got two of my favorite things on there: cathedral architecture and wildlife, especially birds. I'm a bit of an avid bird photographer myself back in the day, So this is going to go somewhere maybe around about here, let's say. Maybe here. I'm going to get the book framed, maybe higher. I don't know. I'm going to play around. We'll see what happens. But that is going to go on the wall, and I'll be buying a coloured print when she's finished colourising this thing for the wall as well. So that will be the artwork in the background. And those who don't know, go check her out. Go check out her. She has a Telegram group. She has a website under Elizabeth Joyce as well. She can do commissions for weddings and all sorts of things. Go and check out her work if you haven't already. In fact, I'm going to share even more. The Telegram group, for example, where is it? Here it is. She's been sharing some examples of the work she's been doing. Look at this. So as you just saw, that was the non-colorized version that I just held up to you. But she is working on painting the birds, getting the color in the background, and she's doing an amazing job. Fantastic artist. So she's not paying me to say this. I just know you have to support artists as and when they're around. It's a hard business to be a part of, and she's having a good go at, making this her career as best she possibly can. And we have to support one another. She's a sister in Christ, first and foremost, and we have to support each other, I believe. So there we go, guys. Go and check out her work if you haven't already. Elizabeth Joyce Artworks. You can find it on Google, I'm sure, and order some prints. Get involved. She has many, many other drawings you can look at, which are also equally as incredibly detailed as these. So there we go, guys. Anyway, back to this. Let's get the camera swapped. Lovely. What's going on? It was 95 degrees. Just looking at this sweater makes me sweat. But it's nice. Now maybe we're a bit jelly. It's not so... Yeah. Well, I'm in Britain. Like, our summer lasts 7 days, if you're lucky. You know, 7 days is a good summer. It's everything's brown and orange now. The leaves are all falling off the trees and it's getting cold. It's getting... The breeze is getting brisk, you know, and... I kind of like this season. I'm not a hot weather guy, and for obvious reasons. I mean, look at me. I am not. I cannot stand hot weather. When I went to Florida in May, hated every second of it. Not because it was full of Floridians. I mean, that was one reason, but it was just too hot. It reached like 40 degrees, 43 degrees Celsius every day for like 2 weeks. And I was just, I am my worst version of myself in the heat. Like, I'm not made for it. Like, I wasn't designed fearfully by God to be in hot weather. Like, that's not my natural habitat. So, as soon as the cold weather comes back in Britain, and let's face it, it's not exactly a summer in Britain. We reach like heights of like 28 degrees Celsius max, and that's it, we're done. But I like the cold. That's what I'm trying to say. Let's summarize what I'm trying to say here. I like the cold. Are the people Satan torments during the little season unaware they were in heaven for 1,000 years? What? Are the people Satan torments during the little season unaware that they were in heaven for 1,000 years? Who says we were in heaven for 1,000 years? As far as I'm aware, the rest of the dead remained in Sheol until the 1,000 years had ended, and then the second resurrection takes place. So we weren't in heaven. I don't know where biblically that has come from. I mean, there isn't going to be a new heaven and earth until the end, until the Great White Throne Judgment at the end of time, after the little season. The millennial reign is just a 1,000-year period where the devil's locked up, and full control is given over to Jesus and his saints, and they take part in the first resurrection taken from Abraham's bosom in Sheol. Everyone else gets left behind, and whoever survived tribulation, which was probably next to nobody, they're the ones who continued on, along with those who were resurrected, who, you know, were martyred for Jesus' name's sake, and obviously the saints. So there was very few people around at the start of the millennial reign, with all these buildings everywhere, the ruins everywhere as well, I'm sure, because the earth went through a terrible tribulation event, you know, where everything went off all at once and all the continents just broke away from each other, and floods and tsunamis and earthquakes and all sorts of things. You know, barely anybody survived that, and those who did, you know, got to live as normal humans through the millennial reign for those 1,000 years, surrounded by super ahead humans in their perfected bodies already, you know, but the rest of the dead and anybody who dies during the tribulation didn't go to hell or heaven. They remained in Sheol, I assume. There was no definition of them going anywhere else. They're a part of the rest of the dead, you know, and it says the rest of the dead lived not again till the 1,000 years had ended. I tend to think that's a literal thing. As soon as that 1,000 year had ended, immediately the rest of the dead begin to live again. People have always assumed, oh no, that's for Great White Throne Judgment only at the end of time. Everyone's suddenly resurrected and then gets judged immediately. And that's not really a resurrection, is it? You know, I would assume being resurrected means you're kind of born again, you're here again, or physically you manifest again even, you know. Who knows how it works? Who honestly knows? I mean, you can theorize at the end of time about the timings and how it all works. I mean, I've heard this idea as well, you know, like, you've got all these tribes all over the earth that I'm researching who still clearly venerate the Nephilim in all of their rituals and dress like them and the rest, you know. And it's kind of, it's like an unbroken tradition going all the way back to the post-pre-flood world, you know, and the culture hasn't changed, really. It's been modernized with Christianity, obviously, today, but this folk tradition persists And it's kind of like, well, if there was a 1,000-year reign of Christ, how did it persist? Is it possible that all those people from the ancient world who worship the Nephilim were in Sheol once they died? And then suddenly, boom, they populate the earth again after the 1,000 years, and they carry on as if nothing's happened or time hasn't changed or no time's passed. And these people who lived during a time of demon worship just carry on going on doing their old traditions again. And these are the natives everywhere, you know, that we know of and that we call them. And who knows? That's just a wild speculative theory there. I have no evidence to back that up whatsoever. But when you're trying to fit it into the grand narrative, people ask me all the time, well, what about the natives? You know, what about the native Indians of America and all these type of things? It's like, well, it's possible that as far as they're concerned, they blinked and 1,000 years was gone and they just carried on as if nothing had happened because they didn't even know 1,000 years had passed. They probably didn't even know they died, like, or anything like that. Who knows? Like, but their resurrection came, they were resurrected again and just continued doing what they were doing before Christ. You know, it's, they don't know any different. Or is it possible, you know, people who started to be born from the human survivors of the flood, of the Great Tribulation, you know, eventually through 1,000 years, they started having children and grandchildren and stuff. And is it possible there came a point where all newborn children after the 1,000 years, the souls were from Sheol? They weren't brand new. They weren't being, no new souls were being created anymore once the 1,000 years had ended. Maybe that's what happened. And God was no longer creating new people, you know, with unique individual souls anymore, but instead it was more like the billions and billions of people who had lived once in the past were now being resurrected to live through the little season up until the Great White Throne Judgment, you know. And it's kind of my argument, and again, it's just an argument, it's just an idea for, to justify such an action, because people always say it's appointed for a man to die once and then judgment. Well, maybe they haven't really died until they've got a chance to make the choice, Jesus or God. And those who lived before never had a chance to be saved. They had no chance. There was no redeemer around. It was either follow the law perfectly or die, you know, and that was it, or perish. But then Jesus comes and gives a way for people to no longer be under the tyranny of that law necessarily, and as long as they have faith in Jesus Christ, they can be forgiven of the falling short, which everybody did. Everybody fell short all the time, you know. But now they get to live again in a time where they have the same chance everybody else had during the millennial kingdom. So that's an idea. That's another idea. Another thing that kind of corroborates this is that everything was built up during the millennial reign. All the infrastructure, the buildings, the mansions everywhere, the plumbing, the pipework, the electricity, everything was all set up, ready for this mass influx of people to come back. So they can live in a world that's comfortable enough for them to make the moral choices rather than having to deal day to day with survival choices like it used to be. Maybe. Again, just an idea. I don't know. So my chat disappeared. So I have no idea what people are thinking about what I'm saying here. I assume it's about 80% say, oh, well, that's interesting food for thought, Paul. Thanks for sharing your ideas. And then the other 20% are saying, you're an evil, blaspheming shill who needs to shut up, as if you say such thing. That's not possible. You're a heretic or whatever. Dude, you don't know the correct hermeneutic interpretations of text, clearly. All that kind of stuff is probably also going on, I assume. But it's just, these are just ideas, guys. I don't have the answer. I really don't. I don't know. So, you know, in terms of this time, who are we living in this time? It's something I've been trying to figure out. It really is, in a way. And I have many speculative thought processes I can offer you, but I don't have the definitive answer. And are we being tortured during the little season necessarily? Would you say this is torture? I don't think so. I don't feel like I'm being tortured. If it is, it's like it's more of a torture by omittance type of situation. We're living such luxurious, comfortable lives that we are missing our chance to be saved because we don't feel like we need a savior. It's the opposite problem. We live in abject luxury today. We all live like mini kings, and we all have our bread and circuses that keep us distracted and comfortable. And I think it's comfort that kills people in the long run. I mean, I came to Christ and found God because I went through personal tribulation. It's the things that seemed like they were the worst possible moments in my life that brought me closer to God and taught me the need for a savior and the rest, you know. And it was without tribulation, there was no salvation for me. And I think there's something to that. I think it's that's why God brings tribulation or brought tribulation during that time. Because it's when push comes to shove, people need to make a choice. Are you going to side with God or are you going to side with the devil? Until people are putting that position where they have to make that type of choice, I think they'll always choose luxury because they're in innate sin. They'll always choose the ease of the devil, you know, the easy life he can offer you, you know, the protection. Of course, it's a false protection. It's not really protecting you at all. It's damning you for eternity. Because the point is, he can keep you comfortable in this world, but you'll lose your kingdom in the next world. You'll lose your place in the kingdom in the next world. And it's kind of, you know, real hardcore Christians, you see these memes everywhere. It's like, give me your hardest test, Jesus. I want more struggles. It's kind of like, is that all you've got? You know, it's kind of like, before Christ, it's like, why are you punishing me so much, God? Please stop doing this to me. You know what I mean? I can't take it anymore. Once you've got Jesus, like, give me more. Give me more problems. Give me more tribulation. Give me more things to overcome. You know what I mean? Teach me more. Harden me more. You know what I mean? Like steel on steel type of stuff. You know, make me sharper. That type of stuff. You know, put me in the furnace for a bit longer. It's kind of, you start to get that kind of attitude. Because you can start to see the benefits in tribulation. But then this, your question phrase, like, why we're being tortured during this time, it's kind of like, well, you know, there's a place for that. Because it gets you up off your ass and starts making you actually contemplate the hard questions when bad things happen. So there is that too. I wouldn't call it torture during the little season. It's certainly not pleasant, though. You know, when the devil was given the keys, he very quickly turned this place into a very materialistic, self-centered, narcissistic place to exist, where, you know, step on each other to get your own way is kind of king here, isn't it? You know, but it's kind of the irony of the devil, you know, his eternal curse is that no matter how much he tries to push people away from God, he inadvertently brings them to God. That's kind of, it doesn't matter what he does. As soon as people realize the devil exists, they realize God exists and usually pick God. Like, it's always, it's like a catch 22 for him. He's stuck in like a perpetual nightmare of failure. It's like his rebellion is fruitless and always would have been and always will be. Like, it's kind of, it was a pointless endeavor to begin with, but he's kind of stuck in it now. And he's just taking it as far as he possibly can, but inadvertently failing every time. And so it's kind of funny in a way and psychedelic and weird and odd. To think about. And let me see if I can get this chat back up so I can see what people are saying, because I have completely lost it on OBS's side. Maybe I just need to open a browser. Sorry if I dropped some frame rates, guys. I'm using up bandwidth here. Okay, it's back. No, it's gone. It's gone again. Let's see if I can get it back. It's back. There we go, it's back. Let me just get the chat back. Let's go as far back as we can. I'm America, we live in hell. Jonathan says, what do you think of John 12:32 in context of Satan being locked up? Let me just check John 12:32 quickly here. So, and I, when I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw people to myself. Let's find context. Jesus predicts his death. Now judgment is upon the world. Now the prince of this world will be cast out. And I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw everyone to myself. He said this to indicate the kind of death he was going to die. Yeah, well, I think the devil was pretty much locked up immediately after Christ's crucifixion, death and resurrection. I think it was a pretty immediate thing. And I think all the gods were dead then. You know, was it Peter or Paul who was sent to Greece? Or was it to, with the sole job of announcing all your gods are now dead? You know what I mean? And was it the gods in Athens and people like saying that they're not working anymore? The idols are no longer communicating with us. What's going on? Why has this happened? This is weird, you know? The oracles can't predict things anymore. And it's kind of like, yeah, we've come here to tell you they're all dead now. The devil's been locked up. Jesus is king, you know? And I'm pretty sure that's what happened. So yeah, I'm pretty sure that verse in John there is pretty much saying, you know, when I'm lifted up from the earth, he's going to draw everyone to him. Gentiles, Jews and Gentiles, it doesn't matter who you are. It's all going to come back to, you can be pagan, Gentile, Jew, any corner of the earth, the gospel will be fully spread. Everyone's going to realize the truth now. All the old gods are no longer going to function. All the idols will no longer function. The magic is dead. There is only God now and only Jesus. The truth has prevailed, you know. No more smoke and mirrors, no more illusions. And I think that all came with Jesus's death and resurrection, absolutely. It seemed pretty immediate, I think. And he came back and fulfilled his promise about 49, 45 years from there, in about 70 AD, roughly just after 70 AD. And maybe there was a grace period of time, not long after 70 AD, it seems, where things were happening. But some point between 70 AD and like 536 or something, which may even be the same date that's historically been labeled as a different date, because you look at the events of 536, it was definitely a tribulation style event that came upon the earth at that point, you know, absolute chaos and destruction, the sun going out, every earthquake popping off, darkness everywhere, you know, famine, death and disease and wars and destruction and earthquake, all of it was happening at once in 536. But then in 70 AD, you know, the temple was also being destroyed. So maybe there was a very short period of time, which we've labeled as 500 years, which wasn't really 500 years. It was like another 20 years or 30 years or something. But then not long after that utter destruction, that's when the millennial reign began and was established, and the survivors built again with the help of the saints and Jesus ruling with an iron rod, and all that kind of stuff began. We've amalgamated that period of time to something we call the Dark Ages, a time where Christendom ruled supreme, you know, whether Jesus was physically walking around on earth or reigning from heaven, and that trickle-down effect just began to establish itself on earth, with the devil locked up and no more pagan gods or influence from evil making mankind fail miserably every time anymore. Something beautiful was built, you know, and then it seems like when the 1,000 years has ended, it changed. Things changed, and slowly, if not suddenly, old morals and moral standards have been degraded, turned into something else. That seems to be what's happened, from what I can see. But yeah, the John 12:32, definitely. It's definitely, I think it's definitely referencing the idea of the little season. Coming, you know, the prince of this world will be cast out. You know, and that's the 1,000 years, isn't it? Where there's no more devil, no more judgments, no more accusations, no more shame or guilt laid onto us, no more whispering in our ears, influencing ourselves and our leaders to sin and to be dominated by pride. Nothing but a focus on God and divine inspiration. You can build a beautiful world with 1,000 years of that. And I think that's what was built. Just look at those cathedrals. Look at those Gothic cathedrals. Aren't they something else? I mean, truly something else. Yeah, so there you go. That's why I think of John 12:32, just as a quick reading reference there. I got another super chat, sorry. From David Olson, great to see you as always. Paul, do you think there are levels of Nephilim? Some more intelligent, some more brutish? I'm just trying to reconcile the different conspiracies surrounding them. Clowns, Neanderthal, aliens, etc. Okay, so I think there was the OG original half-human, half-angel Nephilim, which were created before the flood in the times of Jared, which grew to be the size of mountains. These are the Titans. These are ridiculously large creatures. I think in the process of them growing, when it was still possible, it's possible they also impregnated human women and created like quarter angel human hybrids. Then there would be those who also went on to create their own versions of lesser eighth angel human hybrids. And I think there are lesser, smaller iterations that go from the originals So there's your levels, I suppose, each answering to their fathers before them with lessening divine ability, you know. But I think the original OG Nephilim were practically equal to gods, you know, comparable to their fathers, the angels themselves, who were also worshipped as gods. I would say the original hybrids are the ones that look the most like clowns, but I think all of their future, the descendants continue to maintain pale skin, redhead features. Absolutely. Now, in terms of Neanderthal and aliens, I mean, they're secular conceptualizations of biblical concepts that aren't real. I don't think there is such thing as a missing link between man and monkey we call Neanderthal. I think that's just complete bollocks made up to confuse the matters away from the true biblical history. So I don't think like Cro-Magnon, Proto-Indo-European Neanderthal man were the Nephilim or something like that, you know, or our poor interpretation of these evolutionary concepts of what we call Nephilim or something, or that there are future descendants of the Neanderthals today that are less than human, you know what I mean, or knuckle-dragging monkey men, basically, and these are the true Nephilim who are evil, or any of that nonsense eugenics stuff that people are constantly trying to link to my work, especially from the more New Age angle who don't accept biblical history or an understanding of that and are trying to somehow reconcile evolutionary theory with conspiratorial understandings. They often take my work and try to say I'm talking about Neanderthals or Irish people or something, you know what I mean? Or I'm talking about ginger people. It's kind of like my work has nothing to do with any of that. I'm not a borderline white racist eugenicist who somehow thinks ginger people are less than human. And I you can only get to that kind of conclusion when you start messing with evolutionary theory and trying to square it with biblical concepts. They don't, a square peg doesn't fit in a circle hole, you know, vice versa. They're incompatible. The Nephilim aren't human. They are something else. They have nothing to do with ginger people, who are just humans who lack melanin. Okay, it's not the same thing. They are not the same thing. But in terms of levels of Nephilim, yes, there are children of angels, and then there are grandchildren of angels, and there are great great grandchildren of angels who get lesser and lesser in their angelic way the further down they go, to the point where they probably look pretty much human today. If you want to think the descendants of those continued on to today, but they are certainly didn't look like humans in the beginning. And in death, maybe that's how the hierarchy goes. It just all depends on when you were born. The firstborns are the higher of the hierarchy, and the 16th born are at the bottom of the hierarchy in the spiritual realm of disembodied Nephilim spirits, perhaps. It does seem like there is wild variation in demonic form and shape in the spirit realms. You know, people see all sorts of creatures on DMT, not just jesters. But then at the same time, I think humans in the times of Jasher, just before the flood in the book of Jasher, the last 200 years before the flood in the times of Noah, when Noah was probably building that boat, people decided to hybridize themselves with animals. Now, that's not the same thing as being impregnated by an angel. This is something else, isn't it? These are mutants. These are humans who have changed themselves to be something else, to be animalistic, you know, to be hybrids with the animal kingdom. I would say they are perhaps some kind of petty Nephilim or a faux Nephilim, like a false Nephilim. And the phrase I use is people try to Nephilimify themselves to pointless end. You know, all they do is mutate themselves and become mutants or X-Men, you know, monsters. And it's possible when those humans died, they were also trapped on Earth, just like the Nephilim in spirit form, because they deformed their body, which is intrinsically linked with their soul. And they no longer were made in the image of God as God made them. Therefore, they forfeited their ability to leave the earth and go to Sheol. So it's possible that happened too. Who knows? But yes, there's certainly a hierarchy of demons, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Paul, how do you think things will be for us Christians on earth who go against the devil when he tries to rally everyone to fight against Jesus and the camp of saints? Will life be hard for us? Well, I'm starting to wonder if even by the time it comes to rallying everybody to fight against the camp of saints, if there's going to be any Christians left by that point. And I don't necessarily mean they killed us all, but that through the information wars and the times we live in, the solid control and flow of information, it's just that people don't know about Christianity by the time that comes. And they've been so indoctrinated into the beliefs of Satan and Luciferianism in the world that by that point, the New Age religion has kind of won, in a way. The New World Order religion has won. And Christendom's dead. Everyone who believed in Christianity is old or has died now. You know, don't exist anymore, and their children didn't believe or even know about it. We never even taught about it, you know. It's possible that might be the case, Pearl. I don't know. But if Christians are still knocking about when New Jerusalem rocks back up, the beloved city, and people are being rallied to fight against it because they believe it's aliens invading us or something, any Christian who stands up and says no will be considered a traitor to humanity, who doesn't want to let humanity survive the alien invasion. And what does any military do to traitors? Well, in World War One, they lined them up and shot them on the spot. Maybe that'll be our fate too. Who knows? Sorry to get a bit down about it, but you know, that's, you've got to be realistic when you think, when you consider these hypothetical situations, you know, who knows? Paul and Demon Eraser's testimonies are why I reevaluated my Christian faith. Also, JT follows JC, says Madfiddler. Well, that's great to hear. I'm glad you came back to the faith. That's wonderful. Paul, have you looked into star forts or monasteries? The majority of star forts are named after saints, with a really spectacular one in Portugal named Fort of Our Lady of Grace. Really stunning. Yeah, star forts are amazing things, aren't they? Definitely divinely inspired creations. Certainly, with a good aerial view to make sure it all lined up geometrically as well, which is impossible by the standards we're supposed to believe these people were living in during those times when they were built. But there you go. I don't know how early hot air balloons were created necessarily to make it possible. Maybe it's earlier than I thought, but the accuracy in the builds of those star forts is impeccable. Uh, 1231 in my questions, John. 12, I think I included 1231 in. I read the whole passage as it was, didn't I, Jonathan? But yeah, thanks for the question, and I'm glad the answer was satisfactory. Or implacable, as you say. What a great word, implacable. Anyway, guys, how long have I been going for? Let me check. Yeah, I do have to keep this one short today, obviously. I don't have that long. Been going for over an hour, so that's a good amount of time. I'll just do some last minute, you know, talk to you guys about what's going to come next. Hopefully next time I do a live show, there'll be stuff on this wall and it'll look a little bit more exciting. Eh? Who knows? We'll see. We'll see. I was on a radio show called In Other News Radio. That's going to be aired tonight in many places on radio shows, and it obviously on inothernews.com as well. They'll be uploading that. I think that's going to be 1:30 a.m. Eastern time tonight, later on. It's a late show, radio show, and two, I think it's airing on the radio shows, affiliated shows outside of his website at 2 a.m. But I'm going to try and get a copy of that and upload it to my channel so you guys can listen to it on this channel soon as well. If you are interested, the fully raw, unedited audio of that conversation, 2-hour conversation, is available on my Patreon if you want to go and listen to it. But the first edited hour is airing tonight, and the next edited hour is airing next week. But if you want access to the full thing early, you can get all of it and everything we discussed, including all the mistakes and the technical issues and discussions about it in between. It's all available on my Patreon currently as well. It's $5 a month and you get access to everything on Patreon, or you can just buy it separately for $7.50 if you want. But you know, the incentive there is it's cheaper just to sign up for a month, isn't it? So you may as well just do that. So there you go. There's something available for you guys, something that'll be uploaded soon. I will be talking with a channel very soon about why do I always blank at the name of this? Berserk, the anime and manga series called Berserk. The main character being Guts. I think I called it Guts in the last live stream stupidly, but it's called Berserk. Everyone knows this. We're going to be doing a breakdown of Berserk in relation to Millennial Kingdom ideas that have been embedded into that particular anime and manga. So that should be fun. That's coming up soon. I've got a big channel coming on who has about, I think he's got like 250,000 subscribers or something silly. I didn't even realize this when I was talking to him, but he wants to come on and share with me all about it. He's a fan of the channel, and he seems to have some knowledge on these things, so that should be fun. And he's going to come on and tell me all about Berserk, and tell you all about Berserk, and what's in this very popular animated series, which is quite clearly Millennial Kingdom themed. So that should be interesting, and that should be something to look forward to, and I know it's been a big request from many people for a long time, so hopefully, you know, people enjoy that. And I'm going to be on numerous more podcasts in between, and I've got a lot more things lined up. Every Wednesday and Sunday I'm recording something live, and I'm going to try and do this live Q&A in between as well. I'm still writing the book. I've written a couple of extra chapters since we last talked. I'm about 5 chapters into a planned 18. So volume 2 of The Nephilim Look Like Clowns will be available sometime into the back end of next year. I seem to be on track for that. I was posting in the other day into the Telegram group about the Inuit culture and their mask traditions, and I was posting images of the masks they wear, and I'm like, the Inuits are not okay, guys. There's something wrong with the Inuits. Like, I think they need some serious help. They are not a happy people. Like, and you look at the masks they wear, they are terrifying on a surreal, eerie level. Like, it's I've been looking into all their beliefs and traditions, and a lot of the northern natives of America, and they're quite common, a lot of common themes. And I'm working my way south through the American continents right now, showing all the cultures, folk traditions, and the masks they wear, and the costumes they wear, and how they all have clownish features, and how they all have a very similar mythos surrounding what they're trying to represent, and how they all tell you, we are channeling the spirits of the gods by dressing this way. And the common theme is showing the gods all look like clowns for a good reason. So the book's on its way, and I'm doing all the good culture stuff. Once I've done that, I'm going to go through Europe, and then we're going to go through Africa, then we're going to move along, and I'm going to go through all of Asia and Russia and Siberia, all the way through China, and through the Malaysian regions, and through the Indo regions, through India, and then we're going to go even further across to Australia and the archipelago of there of islands. You know, we're going to do it all, guys. I'm going to go through every continent, and I'm going to show wherever the folk traditional gods are venerated, clown features are always involved, because they're all channeling the spirits of the same entities, the Nephilim. I'm proving it, okay? I think I'm already convinced of my own theory, obviously, but I'm going to prove it to everybody who wants to be a denier. But the book's doing really well. It's actually still on 4.8 out of 5 stars, so it still looks like 5 stars on Amazon. They haven't taken a half star off me yet for that. And I have 80 reviews on there. So that's fantastic. It's going strong. The only gripe people have given me is that there's no pictures. Now, I never promised it would be a picture book anywhere. It's not advertised as a picture book either. So it's not fair to criticize me on that. I don't see people criticizing Gary Wayne because he didn't put pictures in his 800-page book. You know, why should I be held up to a different standard? I don't know. But if you want photos for the things I'm talking about, there's a 44-episode video series completely free on YouTube showing it all. So there we go. And who knows, maybe there'll be a special edition combined volumes 1 and 2 in the future with photos and pictures as well. But you know, one photograph, just to get the rights to one photograph and to use it in a publication that you're monetized and making money from, can cost like £300 for one photo. That adds up when you want to fill what's going to be about a 600 to 700 page book in the end. It's not as easy as you think it is. You know, and I don't have the weight of a publishing company behind me to cover those type of costs. I'm self-publishing, guys. Bear that in mind, please. But yeah, maybe in the future, who knows, I'll put aside some of the earnings from the book sales to go in towards that. But it's a slow process. I'm doing the best I can with what I've got. That's all I'm saying. But if you want to get yourself a copy of The Nephilim Look Like Clowns, go to Amazon. It's readily available. You can't not buy it, because just look how enticing it looks there. Look at how eye-catching the cover is. But go and read it for yourself. Don't just believe the reviews. Read the book for yourself and let me know what you think. And I'm going to leave it there, guys. Thanks for listening. And as always, God bless.